पावनेभ्यो पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं विशिष्टं भक्तरूपास्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताक्षरं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकम् आराध्यो भगवान् ब्रजेशजनय तद्धाम वृन्दावनम् रम्या काचिदुपासना व्रजवधू वर्जेया कल्पिता श्रीमद्भागवतं प्रमाणममलं प्रेमापुमर्थो महान् श्रीचैतन्यमहाप्रभोर्मतमिदं तत्रागरहन परः हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपिका कान्त कांचनगौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी विश्वानुस्वेरी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा
such a wonderful Krishna conscious experience because everything here reminds us about Krishna. This is the nature of this land. Every particle of it is Chinmaya, transcendental. And it is blessed by the touch of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Vrindaranyam Swapadaramanam. So because of Krishna's lotus feet being imprinted on the soil, this place has become fortunate. When Krishna descends into this world, he descends with his abode as well. And his associates come also. The place where we are sitting in now is called Akrur Ghat. Some of the pastimes that are related to this place we saw in these wonderful impromptu dramas just a few minutes ago. There are a few important pastimes and incidents that happened here. This place has changed a lot in the last few years. And there was big structures and the compounds, all this was not here. Just in a few years there's a lot of development taking place here. Actually the Yamuna in Krishna's time used to flow by from here. That's why it's called Akrur Ghat, it was a ghat. So there were steps, it was right on the banks of the river. But as you know, rivers meander, they wander. So in these 5,000 years, Yamuna has wandered to a distance of about 1.5 kilometers away, if you go this way. And it is said that in the different Puranas, Adi Varaha Purana and so on, that if one takes a bath in the Yamuna at Akrur Ghat, especially on Kartik Purnima, one is sure to get liberated from material existence. And even for those who are materialistically inclined, if they take bath here in a solar eclipse, then they get the benefits of many, many Ashwamedha yajnas and so many other sacrifices and so on and so forth. The Puranas actually declare Akrur Ghat, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. The Puranas declare Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So they declare Akrur Ghat to be the king of all holy places. And it is said that millions of holy places reside here in Akrur Ghat. So there are a couple of important things that happened, which I will just mention sequentially. Number one, this was the place at which Krishna revealed the Paravyoma Vrindavan, Krishna Loka, to the Brajadasis. At this time, at this point here, 5,000 years ago, the Yamuna would flow by and there was a lake attached to Yamuna called Brahma Hrada. So in that lake, Krishna showed them Krishna Loka from the spiritual world. We'll come to that and discuss these pastimes a little bit. The second important thing that happened here was a couple of years later. This pastime about Krishna revealing the abode happened when Krishna was very small. Very small meaning it was just before the Govardhan Leela. He must have been about a little over between 6 and 7. And about 4 years later, roughly, when Krishna was about 10 years and 7 months old, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was taken away from Vrindavan to Mathura. That is when the second pastime took place here, for which this place is more well known. And that is that Akrur brought Krishna and Balaram here. He took bath in the Yamuna and he saw Krishna and Balaram in the form of Mahavishnu and Anantashesha in the Yamuna. And the third thing that happened here also was that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years ago to Braj for his yatra, he made this his base. After visiting many of the forests, then he came to Mathura, and from Mathura he came here, and he made Akrur Ghat his base, and from here he would go up and down to Vrindavan. So we'll discuss a little bit of these pastimes. First of all, we'll go chronologically with the pastime of Krishna revealing his abode to the Brajavasis. One time, it was summer, and Ananda Maharaj had followed the Ekadashi Vrata. And it was a very short Ekadashi Tithi. And the time came for him to break the Dwadashi, or the Ekadashi fast on the Dwadashi. And the time was very limited. So he rose very early in the morning, actually it was night, and he went to the Yamuna and took bath. As it happened, it was an inauspicious time. So the servants of Varuna happened to be there and they arrested Nanda Maharaj. And they took him away to Varuna's abode within the waters. There were some other cowherd men who had gone along with Nanda Maharaj. And when they saw Nanda Maharaj disappear like that in the water, they raised naturally a human cry, and Krishna came there and immediately understood what had happened. So he also dove into the water and immediately went to Varuna Loka. And there he saw Nanda Maharaj and Varuna. Upon seeing Krishna, Varuna Dev became extremely happy. Actually, this whole pastime was enacted for several reasons. One of them being that Krishna wanted to bestow his mercy on the demigod Varuna. As you know, the demigods are also devotees of the Lord. And another reason was that Krishna wanted to bestow his mercy on his dear Brajadasi devotees as well. So when Krishna arrived, then Varuna was overjoyed to see him. And he apologized. And he said, my servants have made a big mistake by arresting Nanda Maharaj. They are ignorant, they are foolish. But nevertheless, the master has to take the blame of the faults of the servants. Yamaraj was also taking responsibility for the Yamadutas' mistakes when they came to arrest Ajamil. When the Yamadutas came back, then Yamaraj said, you shouldn't have gone, because he had chanted the holy names of Lord Narayan. Similarly, when the four Kumaras were at the doorway of Vaikuntha, And Jay and Vijay, the two doorkeepers, obstructed them. And then the four Kumaras cursed Jay and Vijay. There was a bit of a tumult there. And the Lord personally came to the gateway hearing the commotion. And he personally begged forgiveness from the four Kumaras. And he said, this is the fault of my servants, but actually the servant's fault is taken by the master. So it is my fault. So I beg forgiveness. So in the same way, Varuna was also saying, this is my fault. So please forgive me. Then he had Krishna sit on a very nice throne. He worshipped him with all kinds of auspicious substances, and a grand and gorgeous worship ceremony was organized. Nanda Maharaj was, to say the least, astonished to see his young child being worshipped like this by none other than a great demigod like Varuna. And he saw with great awe what was going on. And later, Krishna took Nanda Maharaj back again, and all the cowherd men were waiting out on the shore. And Nanda Maharaj narrated to them, to all the Brajabasis, what had happened. In awestruck tones, he said, I went to Varuna's loka, his kingdom, and there, it was such a wonderful experience. It was so opulent. He described the opulence of Varuna's kingdom. The residents of Vrindavan were astonished to hear of such opulence. And they were even more astonished to hear of how their little Krishna, who was only 6 to 7 years old at this time, was being worshipped as if he was God by Varuna. Of course, Krishna had already performed some many nice pastimes till now, including the killing of many demons. He had exhibited his prowess. He had subdued Kaliya and so on and so forth. But each time the Vrajavasis would think that this was by the mercy of Lord Narayan that Krishna had been saved. And these demons were killed because of the pious activities that the Brajabasis had done before. So they didn't really understand Krishna's prowess. They understood and didn't understand also at the same time. Krishna forever remained a mystery for them. And they sometimes would try to figure it out, but then they would give up and simply just love him. And that is the business of the Brajabasis, the real Brajabasis. They only love Krishna. They are not concerned with the greatness of Krishna. They are not concerned with the controlling power and the opulences of Krishna. They simply want to love Krishna because he is a lovable cowherd boy. So when they heard all this, they thought, oh, actually then Krishna is God. Varuna was worshipping him as God. And so if Varuna's kingdom is so opulent and wonderful, then we can imagine what Krishna's kingdom must be in the spiritual world. So they were thinking like this and talking amongst themselves like this. Krishna, being the all-knowing Supreme Lord, understood what was in their heart. So he said, all right, my dear Brajabasi devotees are getting enchanted and impressed by an ordinary demigod's opulences, which are just an infinitesimally small fraction of my opulences. They don't realize who they are. They are my associates from the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. And secondly, they don't realize that the Vrindavan in which they are living has infinitely more opulences than the paltry opulences of Varuna's kingdom. You see, in Vrindavan, it is called the Madhurya Dham because it is overflowing with the sweetness of the love for Krishna. Vaikuntha is called Aishwarya Dham because in Vaikuntha, what is prominent is Krishna's opulences. In the mood of Aishwarya or opulence in Vaikuntha, Krishna is worshipped in a mood of awe and reverence. Whereas in Vrindavan, Krishna is not worshipped in the mood of awe and reverence. He is simply loved because he is what he is, a lovable cowherd boy. So, one might wonder, that means in Vrindavan there is no Aishwarya, there is no opulence in Vrindavan? The answer is, there is much more opulence in Vrindavan than one can imagine, even more than in Vaikuntha. But, in spite of all these opulences, the predominance is of sweetness. Even in the midst of all the opulences, the Brajabasis are not distracted. They love Krishna so much that that love is overwhelming and all-encompassing. From time to time, they are reminded, so to speak, or they remember, quote-unquote, that Krishna is God. And then they are astonished. Oh, our Krishna is actually God? But you see, the peculiarity is that they do not reduce the sweetness with which they love Krishna. That doesn't change. But it does change outside of Vrindavan. Even for Mother Devaki and Vasudev, we saw these pastimes being enacted just a few minutes ago. After Krishna killed Kamsa, Mother Devaki and Vasudev, they came up to Krishna and Balaram, but they were now so awestruck. They were thinking, oh, these are not our sons. They are actually God. So their vatsalya bhava, the mood of parental affection, it drastically diminished. And they did not now want to embrace them and kiss their heads as they would have normally done for their little children. So Krishna and Balaram did not like that. They wanted to relish the vatsalya ras with their parents. So then again Krishna covered Devaki and Vasudeva with yoga maya. So once again they began to think of them as their children, as their sons. So the point is that when Devaki and Vasudeva saw such an exhibition of Krishna's prowess and his opulence, their madhurya diminished, their parental love diminished, and it was transformed into a mood of awe and reverence. Similarly, when Arjuna saw Krishna's universal form as described in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, then his very intimate, friendly feeling for Krishna subsided and it was replaced by a feeling of awe and reverence. And Arjuna began to seek forgiveness from Krishna that I have offended you in so many ways by calling you Yadava, Sakha, Krishna, I have sat with you, eaten with you, joked with you. So please forgive me for all these things that I may have done in ignorance or madness or out of love. Pranayena, pramadena. So out of love, pranaya, or out of pramad, out of madness, I may have done so many things. Please forgive these offenses of mine. So outside of Vrindavan, when there is a display of Krishna's opulences, then the sweetness diminishes, but not so in Vrindavan. Despite the exhibition of all the opulences here in Vrindavan, even though momentarily the Brajabasis think of Krishna as God, but they still love him in the same way. The older Brajabasis will still think of Krishna like as if he is their son. The cowherd boys will still think of him as their friend and so on. So now, having heard of Varuna's kingdom and the opulences there, being very, very simple village folk, they also wanted to think, oh, our Krishna is God. So maybe he will be very kind to us and show us his kingdom. You see, normally city people are very complicated people. But village people are very simple by nature. And the Brajabasis, they are eternal associates of the Lord, most of them. But nevertheless, by Yogamaya's power, they were just simple villagers. And they were so innocent, almost childlike. Oh, Krishna, I hope we can see Krishna's kingdom. So Krishna's only business is to please his devotees. So he understood this and said, all right, these people don't realize how much opulence is there in Vrindavan that is here. So first of all, I will make them understand how fortunate they are. I will show them the Goloka Vrindavan of the spiritual world, and by which they will understand that the Vrindavan in which they are living is exactly the same as that Vrindavan. This is an important point. The Vrindavan that is in the spiritual world is called Paravyoma Vrindavan. Para means transcendental or spiritual, and Vyoma means sky. So the Vrindavan that is situated in the spiritual sky, and this Vrindavan in which we are all present now, sitting here, is called Bhauma Vrindavan. That same Paravyoma Vrindavan which has appeared or manifested on this Bhumi or the earth in the material world. And Krishna wanted to make the point that both these Vrindavans are exactly identical. There is no difference between them. So then he brought his dear Vrajavasi devotees to this place where the Yamuna was flowing, and there was a river, the Brahma Rada. And he made them take bath in that river. And as they rose, Shukadev Goswami explained, they saw the spiritual world. And Shukadev Goswami uses the word Krishna's planet, Loka. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains in his commentary that Krishna did not show the Brajabasis just some ordinary Vaikuntha planet. Of course, the Vaikuntha planets are not ordinary. They are spiritual. But compared to Goloka Vrindavan, they are relatively ordinary, because Goloka Vrindavan or Krishna Loka is a supreme planet of the spiritual world. There is one Krishna Loka there, and there are unlimited other Vaikuntha Lokas. So Krishna actually showed them his spiritual world, and specifically the Krishna Loka planet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught Sanatana Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna Loka has three divisions. There is Gokul, there is Mathura, and there is Dwarka. So Krishna Loka was seen by the Brajabasis. They could see Krishna there in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. They could see him performing his pastimes. They could see him being honored and worshipped in different ways out of love. And also, after some time, immediately Krishna made them see the impersonal Brahma Jyoti also, Shukadev Goswami explains. He showed them Brahma Loka. By Brahma Loka, we don't mean in this context the abode of Lord Brahma, the creator of this material world. By Brahma Loka here we mean Brahma meaning spiritual. So Krishna showed the Brajabasis the entire spiritual world, including the Brahma Jyoti, and specifically the Krishna Loka planet. The acharyas explained that just that we can see the moon in the sky, in the same way the Brajabasis could see Krishna Loka in the spiritual sky, and they could get a zoom perspective, a close-up view of all that was going on in Goloka Vrindavan. Such was the opulence and the sweetness that was displayed to the Brajabasis. So because Krishna revealed the spiritual world, which is also called the Brahma Loka, that lake was named as Brahma Rada. Rada means lake. Brahma means spiritual, because that's where they had darshan of the spiritual world. And the Brajabasis were really astonished to see this most wonderful spectacle. And they realized, it's the same. We are here in this Vrindavan. That's also the same there. And they understood their great fortune. Not only was their desire to see Krishna's kingdom fulfilled, but they also understood that it was the same, it is non-different. So this pastime took place over here, a very, very wonderful pastime where Krishna displayed these this phenomenon to the Brajavasis here. And some years later then, Akrura would come here. So that is another pastime that took place over here. As you know, and as we saw in the drama, that Kamsa organized a Dhanur Yajna, a festival or a competition in connection with the bow that he had, that was given by Lord Shiva. And he had, on that pretext, called Krishna and Balaram to Vrindavan so that he could get an opportunity to kill them. That was his desire. He sent Akrura. Akrura understood fully well what was Kamsa's plan, but he also understood that Krishna and Balaram were the Supreme Lord. They were quite capable of defending themselves, and in fact, this was the end of Kamsa. He also saw it as a good reason to get darshan of Krishna Balaram and all the Brajavasis in Vrindavan. So he boarded his chariot and came here. The journey of Akrura from Mathura to Vrindavan is considered by the Acharyas as an exemplary journey. Since it is not the prime topic for today, we will not talk in detail about it. But suffice it to say that Srila Prabhupada explains that when we come to Vrindavan, we must come here in the same way that Akrura came here. That doesn't mean that we must also sit on a horse chariot. It means that we must have the same eager mentality that Akrura had. And he was eagerly waiting and praying, when will I reach, when will I reach? Every moment was seeming very, very long. And when he reached Vrindavan and he saw the footprints of Krishna, he jumped off his chariot and started rolling in the dust of Vrindavan, which is considered so holy, not considering his position. So Srila Prabhupada explains that one cannot come to Vrindavan with a railway ticket, or with an aeroplane ticket for that matter, or by any other ticket except the ticket of humble devotion. Srila Prabhupada says one must follow in the footsteps of Akrura. And as soon as one reaches Vrindavan, one must get down and roll in the dust and not consider one's material position in the material world. And in that mood, one must try to understand Krishna's abode, Vrindavan. So Akrura offered wonderful prayers to Krishna, and in fact, his prayers brought him to perfection of the Navadha Bhakti, the ninefold process of bhakti. The process of prayer or vandanam has been perfected by Akrura. This is what the Acharyas explain. So Akrura reached Vrindavan. Everyone welcomed him, but they understood the purpose for which he had come. So therefore, they name is not at all befitting your activities, or your activities are not at all befitting your name. Your name is Akrura, one who is not cruel, but actually by your activities you are displaying yourself as being the most cruel, because you are taking Krishna and Balaram away from us. We cannot imagine the kind of attachment the Brajavasis had for Krishna. The prospect of being separated from Krishna was unbearable for them. It was worse than death. Somehow or the other, Krishna pacified all the Brajavasis, and especially the gopis. It was a heart-rending situation. And there is a place, a village not far from Nandagram, because Krishna was living in Nandagram at that time. As you know, initially they were living in Gokul, then they moved to Vrindavan Chatikara area, then later they moved to Nandagram. So from Nandagram, Akrura was taking them there. So the point at which Krishna and Balaram ascended the chariot, there is a village there called Bijavari. And it's interesting how this name Bijavari has come. It is a corruption of the word, Sanskrit word, Vidyut Punja. Vidyut means lightning and Punja means a bolt. So for the Brajavasis and especially for the gopis, Akrura's action of trying to take away Krishna and Balaram was like a bolt of lightning striking their heads. It was so painful. And so this Vidyut Punja got corrupted by the local languages, and then it is now known as Bijavari. It's about a mile and a half from Nandagaon. So that is the place where this pastime happened. So the journey of Akrura with Krishna Balaram started from there, and it moved on. There's also another village there called Parsom. It is said in the local Braj tradition here that Krishna promised the gopis, "I will return day after tomorrow." So local language, Parsom means day after tomorrow. So the village became known as Parsom. Of course, Krishna didn't return Parsom. He didn't come for a long time. It is called Parsom. Then they passed through many other villages. Near there is also another village in Bhakti Ratnakar. It is also mentioned that there is a village called Si. The word Si, again a corruption of the word Shigra, Shigram. Krishna said, "I will return Shigram, very quickly." So because that is a place where he pacified the devotees by saying, "I will return Shigram," or quickly, that village became known as Shigram, or now it is known as Si. Si is the village. Then after going through all these villages, then they arrived here at this spot, Akrura Ghat, which later became known as Akrura Ghat. It was otherwise called Brahma Radha. And then as they parked here, Krishna and Balaram descended. They went to the Yamuna. They refreshed themselves. They took Achaman and also they drank water to their satisfaction. They went back to the chariot and had the chariot drawn into a grove that had shade. And then Akrura got down and he went into the Yamuna. As he immersed himself up to his waist to perform the usual religious functions that one does when one enters a holy river, he suddenly saw Krishna and Balaram in the river. And he was confused because he had just seen them on the chariot. He had come from the chariot and in the Yamuna he saw them here. So he thought maybe he made a mistake. He went back towards the chariot. He saw that Krishna and Balaram were very much there in the chariot, relaxing. He came back to the Yamuna again. And this time he once again saw Krishna and Balaram, but not in the two-handed form. First of all, he saw Ananta Shesha, whose necks were white like the filaments of a lotus flower, and whose body was blue. He had thousands of hoods and he was shining resplendent with glory. And all the Gandharvas, Kinnaras, Charanas and many, many others from the spiritual world also were standing around offering prayers and worship. And then on top of Ananta Shesha, Akrura saw the four-armed Supreme Lord. The same Krishna had now manifested his Vishnu or Narayana form, his Swarup, Chaturbhuj Swarup. And as he lay there relaxing in his beautiful dark blue complexion with his golden lightning colored dhoti, he was looking brilliant and beautiful. And here also he was accompanied by his different energies, like Shri, Urja, and many, many other potencies. Many great devotees were also worshipping him. Akrura was astonished to see this. He promptly began to offer prayers. An entire chapter is devoted to the prayers of Akrura when he saw this vision. And after he saw this, he returned to the chariot a stunned man. And Krishna, being a little mischievous, wanted to tease him. And Krishna said, "My dear uncle," after all, Akrura was the uncle of Krishna, "My dear uncle, from the expression on your face, it appears that you have seen something very wonderful." So Akrura replied, poker-faced, "All wonderful things that exist in the sky, in the water, and on the land, they exist in you. So when one sees you, what more wonderful things are left to be seen? One has seen everything that is wonderful." So Krishna just smiled. And there was no further discussion on this whole topic. It's not that Akrura said, "Oh, really, you are God," and it was analyzed. No. Akrura just kept quiet. He was just too overwhelmed by this whole experience. Proceeded, he drove Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. After this incident, this place has become known as Akrura Ghat. Now there is, according to our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, a great significance, a transcendental significance to this place, which deals with Krishna Tattva, the truth of Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami, the great Acharya, has explained in his Shat Sandarbhas that one must distinguish between Avatari Krishna and Avatar Krishna. Avatari Krishna is the Krishna of Vrindavan. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. That Govind or that Shyam Sundar who resides in Vrindavan. And he is the source of all the other expansions and avatars. Ramadi Murti Shukalani Yamena Tishtham Nana Avataram Akarot Bhuvaneshu Kintu. So all the different avatars like Ram, Narasimha, Narayana, Vishnu, they all emanate ultimately from the Krishna who is in Vrindavan. So these other forms of the Lord are avatar, and Krishna is avatari, the fountainhead of all the avatars. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, "Ete chamsa kalah punsaha Krishna stu Bhagavan swayam Indrari vyakulam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge." After having described the different Purusha avatars and other forms of the Lord, it is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are no doubt the Supreme Lord, but here Krishna, he is Swayam Bhagavan. The others are Bhagavan, God, but the Krishna of Vrindavan is Swayam Bhagavan. Swayam means self, the original Bhagavan, from whom all the other Bhagavans emanate. This doesn't mean that Vaishnavism is a pantheistic or a polytheistic theology where you believe in many gods. No. It's the same one God, but he has appeared in different forms for the sake of assuming different moods, for relishing the devotional service of his devotees in different moods. In Vrindavan there is one mood, and that is where Krishna, the original Krishna, resides, the Avatari Krishna. And outside of Vrindavan, all the different forms of Krishna are the Avatara Krishna. They are Bhagavan, And here in Vrindavan, Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. So, Jiva Goswami explains that the original Krishna, he never leaves Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityaja padam ekam na gacchati. Then, if Krishna came here along with Balaram, he did go along with Akrura into Mathura, he did leave Vrindavan, and then he did go to Dwarka, to Hastinapur, to Kurukshetra, and to so many other places. So how do we understand this? Again, Jiva Goswami has explained very elaborately that all the Vishnu forms, all the expansions of the Supreme Lord, they reside within the transcendental body of the original avatari Krishna in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, is only enjoying relishable, loving pastimes with his devotees. The function of dharma sansthapanarthaya, of establishing religious principles, vinashaya cha dushkritam, of killing the demons, and so on, is not the activity of avatari Krishna. Avatari Krishna only grazes the cows, has pastimes with the gopis, plays with his cowherd boyfriends. And it is when Krishna kills the demons, it is a Vishnu aspect of Krishna who actually emerges to kill. Srila Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book that even in Vrindavan, when Krishna killed the demons, it was the Vasudeva feature or the Vishnu feature of Krishna, the avatar aspect, who actually killed the demons. Vrindavan Krishna simply enjoys. So when Krishna came here at Akrur Ghat, at that time, when he immersed himself in the Yamuna, there was a transformation. Two-handed Krishna remained behind in an unmanifest and now from within the two-handed form of Krishna, the four-armed Vasudeva feature emerged, and he was the one that Akrura took on to Mathura, and eventually he went to Dwarka and other places. So the Acharyas have explained that Krishna always is in Vrindavan. Sometimes we can see him and sometimes we cannot see him. When can we see him? During his manifest pastimes, his Prakat Leela. 5,000 years ago when Krishna appeared here, the ordinary people could see him. So this is called Prakat Leela. Prakat means manifest. Even to ordinary vision, Krishna's activities, his form, they were visible to everyone. And when Krishna wound up his pastimes in Vrindavan by leaving for Mathura, Krishna did not actually leave Vrindavan. He remained behind in an unmanifest form because he eternally resides in Vrindavan. Krishna's pastimes are eternally going on in Vrindavan. They never stop. They are unmanifest to our vision because we don't have the pure devotional vision to understand this and to see this. So Krishna remained behind. Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book also that Krishna remained behind in his bhava form, aprakat, unmanifest form, continuing his pastimes on the unmanifest level. Whereas Vasudev Krishna and as Balaram became Sankarsana, so they went on to Mathura to perform pastimes there. So this is the transition point, Akrur Ghat, because this is the boundary, Jiva Goswami says, between Vrindavan and Mathura. It's an invisible transcendental boundary line, a border. And Krishna never, the Vrindavan Krishna never crosses this border. He always is on this side. He is one person. It is not that Krishna who is in Vrindavan and Krishna who is in Mathura are different. It's the same Krishna, but Krishna has now assumed a mood that is more official when he goes to Mathura and Dwarka. So you could say that Krishna in Vrindavan is Krishna at home, and Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka is Krishna in the office. Just like a man at home, maybe in his casual clothing, very relaxed, very informal in his behavior, you can get to know him very closely. But when you go to his office, he will be a little more formal. He may speak to you nicely, but still, he cannot be as intimate. So similarly, Krishna, his home is Vrindavan. So he lives here and relishes very, very intimate pastimes with the gopas and gopis. But when he comes to Mathura in Vrindavan and Dwarka, then even though his pastimes are still very loving, but they are not as loving as in Vrindavan. Because now Krishna is playing the role of a prince or a king. So this is that transition point where Vrindavan Krishna has moved from his prakat lila to his aprakat lila. Many times devotees come to Vrindavan and they have what Prabhupada called a sahajiya mood. Sahajiya means to take bhakti very cheaply. They go to Nidhivan or to Seva Kunj and they say, we want to see Krishna in the bushes at night. We will go there and see. And they say, well, if you go there at night, then no one returns alive. There are many people who come and ask like this, that can we also go and see? But that is not the proper thing to do. Krishna, yes, he is in Seva Kunj. He is still doing his Rasa Leela in Vrindavan. He is still performing pastimes with the gopis. Every day he takes his cows out for grazing. Even now, it is going on. Even as we are sitting here and speaking, Krishna is frolicking with his cowherd boyfriends. And many, many pastimes are going on. But we cannot see that. The qualification for seeing the unmanifest pastimes is not, as Prabhupada said, coming here with a railway ticket. Vishaya chadiya kabe shuddha habe man kabe hama haribo shri Vrindavan. Narottam Das Thakur has said, when will my heart be completely purified of the desires for sense gratification? So then I can see Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan, for what it really is. Then when one is qualified to see real Vrindavan, all the pastimes will be manifest to our vision. So for an eternal associate of the Lord, these pastimes are always manifest. But in the material world, these pastimes are only sometimes manifest. By Krishna's mercy, only for a short duration of time. Krishna manifested his pastimes in Vrindavan for over just a little over 10 years, between 10 and 11 years. Then he stayed in Mathura for another till the age of 28. And then he went on to Dwarka and lived till the age of 125. So relatively speaking, the pastimes in Vrindavan are shorter in time duration. But they are actually the most important and the sweetest of all of Krishna's pastimes. So when Akrura brought Krishna here, Krishna knew that he had to move on to these other pastimes. So then he remained in his aprakat form here along with Balaram. And then Vasudev and Sankarshan went on to Mathura and other places, including Dwarka. So this is the transcendental significance of Akrura Ghat. It is the border between Vrindavan and Mathura. So we are sitting at that place now. So the Akrura Ghat pastime being very famous, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, he also resided here after having visited all the holy places, many of them, at least the different forests. he came to Mathura. He met a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who was a Sanodiya Brahmana. And having recognized him, the Sanodiya Brahmana recognized the symptoms, and Mahaprabhu also recognized him, that he's a follower of Madhavendra Puri. They became very close, and Mahaprabhu went to his house. But soon the place became so crowded that Mahaprabhu left. He wanted some solitude to chant the holy name properly. So he came over here to Akrur Ghat. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a lengthy description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stay at this place. Kaviraj Goswami calls this place as Akrura Tirtha. So Mahaprabhu came here and he would stay here, and then he would go early morning from here to Vrindavan. One time he went to Keshi Ghat, Kaliya Daha, then he went on next day to Imli Tala. Then he would sit at Imli Tala under the tamarind tree there, and he would chant the holy names in great ecstasy till noon or so. And then he would come back to Akrur Ghat, Akrur Tirtha. He would take his prasadam here. And then he would meet with the local people over here. Once when he was over there, he met one Rajput, a person from the Rajput caste, whose name was Krishnadas. He was also a devotee of the Lord. He lived on the other side of the Yamuna. When he came to Imli Tala and he saw Mahaprabhu, he immediately understood that this is not an ordinary sannyasi. So he offered his obeisances. And Mahaprabhu understood that this was a great devotee. He asked him, "Who are you?" Krishnadas Rajput introduced himself, and he accompanied Mahaprabhu all the way back to Akrur Ghat here. He carried his water pot and so on. And then he was fortunate enough to receive the remnants of Mahaprabhu's Mahaprasadam here. Meanwhile, even here at Akrur Ghat, because people were coming here and crowding, Mahaprabhu was finding a disturbance in his bhajan, in his chanting. So he would go early morning to Vrindavan. And after prasadam in the afternoon, then he would meet all the people who would come from around here. And he would preach to them about the importance of chanting the holy names. And this continued like this for several days. Every day, Mahaprabhu would go from here to Vrindavan, sit at Imli Tala, chant, and then come back. I think you will also be visiting Imli Tala perhaps as part of your Vrindavan trip. And one time it so happened that Mahaprabhu saw a whole host of people coming this side. It was a tumultuous sound coming from the crowds of people coming. And Mahaprabhu asked them, "Where are you coming from and what happened?" So they said, "We have just seen Krishna." Of course, they were just seeing Krishna, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. But they didn't realize that Mahaprabhu is Krishna. They were thinking of Shamsundar Krishna in the blue complexion. They said, "Krishna has appeared in Kaliya Daha, the lake of Kaliya. And he's dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. And the jewels on the hoods of Kaliya are blazing brightly. And this vision is seen at night." So for 3 days consecutively, these people would go there. When Mahaprabhu heard this, he smiled. And he said, "That is correct, that is correct." He was just smiling sarcastically. So for 3 days, this went on like this. The people would go at night and try to see what they saw, what they thought was Krishna. And they would come back here to Akrur Ghat. And they would meet Mahaprabhu and tell him, "We saw Krishna, it is definitely Krishna, there is no doubt about it. Today also we saw Krishna." Now Mahaprabhu's servant, he was quite a learned person, but somehow he also got influenced by all this propaganda that Krishna had appeared in Vrindavan. So he approached Mahaprabhu at the end of the third day, here in Akrur Ghat. and said, I would also like to go and see Krishna in Kaliyadhara. So Mahaprabhu was very merciful. The Lord's mercy can come in different ways. So on this occasion, Mahaprabhu extended his mercy by slapping Balabhadra Bhattacharya. And he said, you fool, you are a learned person, but you have become a fool in the association of these foolish people. Why would Krishna appear in Kali Yuga? And then he said, anyway, you wait till tomorrow night and then go tomorrow to see Krishna. And in the meanwhile, a short time after that, some respectable gentlemen from the area, they came. Mahaprabhu asked them, so have you seen Krishna? They said, yes, we have. Actually, it was a rumor. It was a wrong thing. What happened was that there was a fisherman, and he goes out to fish every night in the Yamuna. And he has a lantern in the boat. And so they think that the boat which is rocking is Kaliya, and the fisherman is Krishna, and the lantern they think are the hoods, are the diamonds shining on Kaliya's hoods. So it was a wrong impression, it was an illusion. So they said all the people were fooled. It is not true. Krishna did not appear. But actually now we are seeing Krishna. We have directly seen Krishna now. So Mahaprabhu said, how is that you have directly seen Krishna? So they replied that you are a sannyasi. And sannyasi is Narayana. Sannyasi is God. You see, in the Mayavadi Sampradaya, they have this statement. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, Kaviraj Goswami mentions this. Danda grahana matrena nara narayano bhave. That when you hold a danda, then nara or human becomes narayana or God. So that's why they address each other when they see each other as Om Namo Narayanaya. So meaning I offer obeisances to you who are Narayana. And the other one will also offer obeisances. I offer obeisances to you who are also Narayana. But that is of course not appreciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they were thinking like that. When I took was their idea of these respectable gentlemen who came here. So they said, you are Lord Narayan. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately held his hands to his ears and said, Vishnu, Vishnu, please don't commit such an offense. Don't call a jiva as Narayan or Vishnu. The jiva is only a small spark, and the Lord is like the flame. The jiva is only like a molecular particle of the sun rays, and Krishna is like the sun. We can never compare. It is a great offense to compare that to say that the living entity is actually Vishnu. So Mahaprabhu spoke at length the proper philosophical understanding about sambandha, sambandha jnana. And then these people replied, well, we know that you are not a human being because your characteristics and bodily features are exactly like those of Shyamasundara Krishna. The only difference is that you have covered your real feature with this golden complexion. When the very fragrant aroma, or when the very fragrant musk, the deer musk, kasturi, you know, kastur, when that is covered in a cloth, then the fragrance cannot be hidden. Similarly, your golden complexion cannot hide the fact that you are actually none other than Nanda Nandana Krishna. So in this way, the people here glorified Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu continued to live here for a few days. The Sanodiya Brahman went to the houses of the different Brahmanas living here and encouraged them to invite Mahaprabhu for prasadam. And Balabhadra Bhattacharya, who was a servant of Mahaprabhu, was receiving 10 to 12 invitations per day. But naturally he could accept only one. And sometimes Mahaprabhu would go to their homes, and sometimes these Brahmanas would come here to Akrur Ghat, and they would cook, and when they cooked, they would offer to their Shaligram Shilas, and then they would offer to Mahaprabhu. This went on here for several days. In the meanwhile, Balabhadra Bhattacharya was having a hard time, because all these people were coming to him with persistent invitations, please bring Mahaprabhu to my house. So he was not able to handle all of them. So he was in great anxiety. But anyway, the prasadam was going on, Mahaprabhu would sit here and he would be friendly with all the local people and chant Harinam, and sometimes he would preach to them. One time when he was sitting on the bank of the Yamuna here at Akrur Ghat, he remembered that Akrura had seen Vaikuntha here. And then he sat and he started reciting. He said that this is the spot where Akrura saw Vaikuntha, and this is also the spot where the Vrajavasis saw Goloka Vrindavan. And then in ecstatic trance of love of Krishna, he jumped into the Yamuna and remained underwater. And this happened even as Krishnadas Rajput was looking on. Krishnadas Rajput was aghast and he started crying out loudly, "Help, help!" And Balabhadra Bhattacharya came in and he dove into the water and picked out Mahaprabhu, who was inside the water. At this time, Balabhadra Bhattacharya had snapped. He said, "Now we can't do this, it's too dangerous. Mahaprabhu was doing this here. If he does it in Vrindavan when he goes alone, what will happen? At least I was here nearby, so I could save him. If he goes into an ecstatic trance like this and jumps into the water when he goes to Vrindavan, what will we do? So now we cannot have him here. My opinion is," he told the Sanodiya Brahmana, "that I must take Mahaprabhu out of Vrindavan again." So after consulting, the two of them came to the conclusion that since it was the beginning of the Magh month, which is winter, it was a good time to move towards Prayag, Prayagraj, Allahabad, present-day Allahabad. And there in Makar Sankranti, to take bath in the Triveni Sangam, the confluence of the Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati. So Sanodiya Brahman told Balabhadra Bhattacharya that, "You please convince Mahaprabhu like this and then you can take him along." Balabhadra Bhattacharya expressed his desires and said, "Please let us leave. All these people are coming here and they're taxing my brains. So I cannot, and let us go now to Prayag." So Mahaprabhu was very sweet about the whole thing. He said, "You have brought me to Vrindavan, so I'm so grateful to you. So wherever you like to take me and whenever you like to take me, you can do that. I'm at your disposal." So then at an opportune time, Balabhadra Bhattacharya led Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu away from here, from Akrur Tirtha, and he took him away towards the south. In this way, Mahaprabhu spent many days here at this point. Normally when devotees come here, we only discuss the Akrur Ghat pastime of Krishna and Balaram revealing their forms as Vishnu and Anantashesha. We don't so much discuss the other pastimes of Krishna revealing Krishna Loka, and also the pastimes that Mahaprabhu did here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So all this happened at 11:10? So all these pastimes happened here. So this is Akrur Ghat, the transcendental border between Vrindavan and Mathura. But there is also another important place nearby where another important pastime of Krishna took place. That place is Yajnasthali, the place where Krishna delivered the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas. The village is called Bhatron in the local language. You understand bhat? Rice or grains or food. So because that was the place where the Yajnik Patnis, Yajna Patnis, the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas, fed Krishna, Balaram and the cowherd boys, so that place has now become known as Bhatron. So this also appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a wonderful story. This happened after the Govardhan Leela took place, so Krishna must have been somewhere between 7 and 8 years of age. And it was before, it was much before the Govardhan Leela, or the Rasa Leela. So Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends, they were wandering here, moving around in this area. And the cowherd boys approached Krishna, Rama Rama Mahabaho, Krishna Dushta Nibarhana. He says, "O mighty An Balaram, and O Krishna, who destroys the miscreants, please destroy one Rakshasa, one miscreant who has just been born. And he's residing in our stomachs, we are all very hungry. So please destroy this demon of hunger." So Krishna, who is very kind to his devotees, said, "All right, my dear friends, not far from here, there are some Yajnik Brahmanas who are performing some yajnas for elevation to the heavenly planets. So please go to them and ask them for some prasadam. And then you can come back and we can all extinguish our hunger." So at this time, through this pastime, Krishna wanted to bestow his causeless mercy upon the Yajna Patnis. And he wanted to send out a very important message to the whole world. And that message was that one may be very austere, very learned, very expert in performing the Vedic rituals, but if one is not a devotee, then one will be bereft of Krishna's mercy. But on the other hand, if one is endowed with devotion to Krishna, and even if one doesn't have these qualities of austerity, knowledge, understanding of performance of all the Vedic rituals and so on, one will still be fortunate enough to receive Krishna's mercy. So these Brahmanas were Karma Kandi Brahmanas. They were Brahmanas who were interested not in devotional service to Krishna, but they were interested in elevation to the heavenly planets, in sense gratification, and so on. As Krishna has explained in the Bhagavad Gita, "Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitaha vedavadratah partha nanyat astiti vadinaha kamatmanam swargapara janma karma phala pradan kriya vishesh bahulam bhogeshwarya gatim prati." In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that there are certain people who are vedavadratah, who are so-called followers of the Vedas. They are not actual followers of the Vedas, because they don't understand the real conclusions of the Vedas. The real conclusion of the Vedas is to understand Krishna, Vedaisya Sarveir Aham Eva Vedyaha. But these people who are very engrossed in Karmakanda, they do not understand this point. So they are more attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, Pushpitam Vacham. And Bhoga Aishwarya Gatin Prati, they think that Bhoga or enjoyment and Aishwarya or opulence, these are the things worth striving for. So they want to go to the heavenly planets. They want to get high birth, lot of opulence and so on. So these brahmanas were performing these kinds of sacrifices of karma kanda. They did not understand yagyo vai Vishnuho. That yagya means Vishnu or pleasing Vishnu. Aham adarhi devana bhokta cha prabhur evacha. He is the enjoyer of all the yagyas, of all the austerities that we do. But these brahmanas, even though they were supposedly learned in the scriptures, they did not understand this point. So therefore all their learning was practically useless. The brahmana boy, the cowherd boys came to the brahmanas and they with folded hands addressed the brahmanas and said, O Bhumi Devaha, O gods on earth, we have come here on the instructions of Balaram and Krishna. Actually they said Balaram first because Krishna had told them, ask them in Balaram's name, because see, I'm the younger one, Balaram is a Kshatriya, I'm a Vaishya, and they are Brahmanas, so they may think, how can we give a Vaishya? At least if it's a Kshatriya, they may understand. So they mentioned Balaram's name first. Will you please give us some food? Not far from here, Krishna and Balaram are grazing their cows, and we are all hungry. The brahmanas were quite proud and they were busy with their ritualistic sacrifices. They did not even look at these young boys who were waiting there. They did not say yes, they did not say no. You see, ignoring someone is worse than being harsh to that person, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you ask some for something, it's better that person says no than ignores you, isn't it? So these brahmanas, they offended the cowherd boys by just ignoring them. They didn't say yes, they didn't say no. So the cowherd boys were a little disappointed. Then they offered their full prostrated obeisances and they glorified them more by addressing them as Dharma Vittamaha, the best among the knowers of religion, knowing that actually they did not understand the purpose of the process of religion. We gave them many technical arguments about how it was not wrong for them to feed Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys. Perhaps the cowherd boys may have, or the brahmanas may have thought that we are brahmanas, how can we feed others till we have ourselves eaten? But there is a Vedic injunction that the prime candidate, the best candidate for feeding is one who is hungry. So regardless of whether one is a brahmana or anything, if one is hungry, one should feed. And then they gave other technical points that said, at such and such points in the sacrifices, it is not a fault or a defect to give in charity. But the brahmanas felt it below their dignity to even respond to these poor cowherd boys, who from a spiritual point of view were actually much more elevated than them. So, being disappointed, they went back to Krishna and Krishna smiled at them gently because he didn't want to be angry with brahmanas. So don't be angry with all the brahmanas who may accost you as you move around Braj. And also he wanted to send a message that a beggar, when you go out for bhiksha, you should be accustomed to hearing some harsh words. When we go out to collect for Krishna or to preach Krishna's message, many times some people may not treat us very well. We should not get angry at that time. This is Krishna's lesson to us. We should accept it with humility, because it is normal for a beggar to be refused often. So he should get accustomed. If a beggar gets angry, he'll never be able to earn a livelihood, isn't it? So like that, if you want to preach and practice Krishna consciousness, then even in the midst of some harsh words, we should be tolerant and continue with our service. So Krishna then said, all right, now you go to the wives of these brahmanas and tell them that we are here. Krishna didn't want them to know that he was hungry, because they were great devotees and they would have felt great sorrow when they heard that Krishna was in trouble feeling hungry. That would have given them a lot of pain as well. So the cowherd boys went to the ladies. The Yajnapatnis were sitting there nearby, and they were overjoyed to see the cowherd boys. The cowherd boys said, Krishna and Balaram are nearby grazing the cows. We are all hungry, so would you be kind enough to give us some prasadam? So upon hearing these words of the cowherd boys, the ladies became extremely happy, and their minds, their consciousness immediately ran towards Krishna. Spontaneously, the way that the mind should spontaneously run towards Krishna, and which it does in the case of great devotees like the Yajnapatnis, is illustrated in Kapila's teachings in the Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein he says, Mad guna shruti matrena mahi sarva guhashaye mano gati ravichinna yatha gangam bhasam budhau. He says, when someone who is spontaneously attracted to me hears my descriptions, my holy name, my glorification and so on, mad guna shruti matrena, simply by hearing it one time, they immediately become so spontaneously attracted that their minds flow towards my lotus feet, just as the Ganga flows from the Himalayas naturally towards the sea. The Lord is situated in everybody's heart, Mai Sarva Guhashaye. So He is the most beloved for everyone. Every living entity loves himself or herself. But when we understand that the self of ourself is Krishna, then automatically we will also love Krishna. So Kapila Dev is explaining that just as Mother Ganga, when she flows down from the hills, she does not bother about the different obstacles that come in the way. She wanders straight towards the sea, and even the obstacles that may come, she somehow or the other finds a way to reach the sea. In the same way, a devotee who loves Krishna spontaneously will always think of Krishna despite the various obstacles that may come in life. This is the goal of our life, to attain such transcendental attraction for Krishna. So these ladies, they immediately took whatever prasadam they had, the food, and they went along with them to where Krishna and Balaram was. And this is a very nice description given by Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami mentions that in that place, Krishna was standing with his cowherd boyfriend. He was with Balaram, and a very nice scenery is depicted by Shukadev Goswami. This was the first time that the Yajnapatnis had seen Krishna. It's a very, very important point, a philosophical point. These Yajnapatnis were already pure devotees without having seen Krishna. The same was the case with Rukmini Devi. She lived in Kaundinyapur in her father's kingdom, and many people used to come, like Narada Muni and other sages would come to the court of the king, King Bhishmaka, and they would glorify Krishna. So Rukmini Devi, just by hearing about Krishna's glories, began to love him. Similarly, the Yajna Patnis, unknown to their husbands, every day would hear descriptions of Krishna's glories. Sometimes the ladies of Raj, the gopis, would be there. Sometimes the flower sellers, the betel nut sellers, all these different people would come, because this was, after all, a borderline place, isn't it? So there would be traffic going both ways. So they would meet and they would hear from them about Krishna. And just by hearing about Krishna, they developed pure love for him. And now, when they understood that they had the chance of seeing Krishna face to face and to actually render him some personal service, they were overjoyed. Immediately, without hesitation, they stood up and started walking out of their houses with whatever they had. Many of their family members tried to obstruct them, but they did not pay any heed to them. And the Yajna Patnis walked on. It reminds us of how the gopis also walked out of their homes despite the protests of their family members. In the same way, the Yajna Patnis also eagerly went out of their homes with the cowherd boys towards where Krishna and Balaram were. And Shukadev Goswami describes the first sight that the Yajna Patnis had of Krishna and Balaram. This is an important verse, one of the very important verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shyamam Hiranya Paridim Vanamalya Barha Dhatu Pravalu Natavesham Anuvratam Se Vinyastam hasta itarena dhunanam abjam karnotpalalaka kapola mukhabjahasam. In this verse, Shukadev Goswami is explaining what Krishna and Balaram were looking like as the Yajna Patnis were watching. Shyamam, he had the complexion of a dark monsoon cloud. Hiranya paridhim, his clothes were of golden color. His dhoti, the pitambar, looked very beautiful, of being of golden color. Vanamalya, he had a vanamala, a garland made of forest flowers around his neck. Barha, he had an ornament of a peacock feather in his hair. And alongside, Dhatu Pravala, he had decorated himself with some minerals. The cosmetics in those days were very simple. Nowadays it's a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide and people give their life to become beautiful. And so many cosmetics and chemicals and all kinds of things are used. But in Krishna's times, the chemicals were so simple. He would just go, pluck some flowers, put them behind his ears, take some peacock feather, put it in his hair, and there were so many twigs and so many leaves which he would decorate himself with. Sometimes there were some minerals, he would rubbing them and he would anoint them, use them as pigments. So Dhatu Pravala Natavesha, he was looking like a transcendental dancer. Anuvratam Se, Anuvrata means his friend, Amse means the shoulders, Vinyasta Hastam. So he had placed his hand on one of his friend's shoulders, Anuvritamse Vinasti Hastam. And with the other hand, Itarena, Dhunana Abjam, he was twirling Dhunana, a lotus flower. So he was in a very dashing, heroic pose. He was standing like that. Krishna is a real hero. our modern heroes are simply imitation heroes. For when Krishna strikes a pose, he really looks dashing and glorious and really attractive. So he struck this pose. Anuvratamse vinyasta hastam, with one hand on the shoulder of a friend, itarena, with the other hand, he was twirling the lotus. And then, apart from that, Karna Utpala, he had the Utpala flowers he had put behind his ears. Sometimes he puts the Karnikara flower and sometimes Utpal, which is a kind of a lotus. And then Alaka Kapola. Alaka means his side locks were coming to the Kapola or his cheeks. Mukhabja Hasam. Mukha is face, Abja is lotus, and Hasam is smile. And his lotus face was decorated with a beautiful smile. So this was the vision that the Yajnapatnis had as they saw Krishna for the first time. So as soon as they arrived there, Krishna was standing there heroically and he said, "My dear ladies, what can I do for you? Why have you come here?" As if he did not know. So they were very happy, of course, that they could see Krishna. But then Krishna started preaching to them. He said, "It is true that the way to obtain me is to worship me by complete surrender." So now he had resumed his, he had turned the knob a little bit, so the mood of awe and reverence had come up a little bit, and he was instructing them in the path of surrender, and said, "Yes, surrender to me is the path to obtain me, but you must go back to your home and assist your husbands and fathers and so on in whatever religious activities they are doing. It will not be pleasing to the people of this area to see that you have left everything and come here. So you go back." The ladies, the Yajnapatnis, said, "We have left everything and come. Our family members will not accept us anymore. And if you are embarrassed that you don't want maidservants who are Brahmanas, because you are a Vaishya and we are Brahmanas, supposed to be higher caste than you, so we will remain here in the forest and we will be satisfied just by placing the tulsi leaves and manjaris that you have neglectfully kicked with your lotus feet on our heads. That will be our satisfaction. We will be here." And Krishna told them that actually, more than being physically in my presence, it is important to hear about me, chant about me, worship my deity and take darshan of my deity, and to meditate upon me. By that way, you can obtain me easily, not just by my physical presence. Which means that the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, the process of taking darshan of Krishna's deity in the temple, worshipping the deity and so on, the elements of sadhana bhakti, that is more important and more potent to yield Krishna prema than it is by directly having audience of Krishna. So there are many examples of people who saw Krishna face to face but did not become devotees. Duryodhana, Shishupal, and so many others, they saw Krishna, they were personally with Krishna for a long time, but they didn't develop any love for Krishna. So Krishna is making this important point. More important than physical proximity to Krishna, it is important for us to hear and chant his glories and to worship him. It's okay. No, not much. It's okay. It's okay. Okay.
Carry
Everyone
on,
is sitting.
Carry on, carry on.
No, 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 no. It's fine.
We want to hear you.
I'll hold it.
You will force me to get up.
No, 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 no.
You will force me to get up.
Let me stand on your face. No.
Where was I? Yes.
Important is about process.
Yeah, so the process. And the verse actually Shukadev Goswami says is Shravana Darshana Dhyanan Mahi Bhavo Nukirtana Na Tatha Sannikarshena Pratiyata Tato Grihan. So this is something very important. We need not worry about when will we see Krishna face to face. That will come. When Krishna feels we are ready for it, it will come. We have to only focus on hearing and chanting, taking darshan of the deities, serving the Vaishnavas and so on. And perfection will come in due course at its own time. No hurry. We cannot storm our way into the kingdom of God. It will come only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. When with great humility and devotion and with a service attitude, we hear and chant the glories of the Supreme Lord in the association of devotees. This is a process of perfection. We don't need anything else. And as Krishna says, na tatha sannikarshena, you cannot achieve this goal even if you are physically in my presence. So this is how kind and merciful Krishna is, that he has given us the opportunity to attain such a degree of perfection simply by hearing and chanting about him. The Yajnapatnis did go back. The gopis didn't go back. That is the difference. So the gopis are at a higher platform than the Yajnapatnis. Both are pure devotees. The gopis are pure devotees in the line of Vrindavan. The exemplary devotees. Ramya ka chidupasana vrajavadhu vargena ya kalpita. The best example of devotion, of worship of Krishna is by the gopis of Vrindavan. The Yajnapatnis are not quite in Vrindavan, nor in Mathura. They are the borderline. They are quite close. They are quite close to the gopis. But not quite in that category. And Krishna had already promised them that when you go back home, then I will make sure that your family members don't get upset with you. So when the Yajnapatnis returned home, then nobody was upset. And in fact, the Brahmanas now began to thoroughly repent their actions. And in a series of verses narrated by Shukadev Goswami, they actually condemned themselves. And they glorify the devotion of their wives. And they start actually looking at their wives as their gurus. They said, these ladies, our wives, they have never gone through any sanskars that we have. They have not done austerities. They have not gone to the house of a guru and learnt under him. They have not learnt how to perform different sacrifices and rituals. They have not learned it in the philosophy. And yet, they have attained this spontaneous love for the Supreme Lord Krishna. We were so busy with our ritualistic sacrifices, we did not understand that the prophecy had been made already that the Supreme Lord would appear in the Yadu dynasty. And he is here, and we are so foolish that we could not recognize him. So they were lamenting like this. and they began to condemn themselves. Dhik janma trivrit, to hell with our high birth, a threefold high birth. The first birth with from our parents, which is from a high family. The second birth when we are initiated, the third birth when we are taught how to do sacrifices. Dhik vratam, to hell with our vows of celibacy and so on. Dhik jnatam, to hell with our knowledge of the scriptures and everything like that. Dhik kriya daksham, to hell with our expertise in performing different ritualistic sacrifices and so on. Dhik kulam, to hell with our high aristocratic birth in Brahmana families. So the Brahmanas have now understood that we have wasted our time, and our wives, they have perfected their life. Oh, what a big mistake we made. But you see, despite this repentance, they did not go to Krishna. They realized their mistake. They realized the glory of their wives' devotion to Krishna. But they still could not get themselves to go to Krishna out of fear of Kamsa. And then Shukadev Goswami concludes by glorifying the devotion of the Yajnapatnis. Very instructive lessons for all of us. So this pastime also took place in this area, and you have to walk a little distance and climb up, and you'll come to that temple there. That Bhatron, the Bhatron village where this pastime took place. And Nakru Ghat here also we have a wonderful temple with Krishna and Balaram, and in between there is Akrura. So these are some of the pastimes that took place in this region. So firstly, Krishna showed the Krishna Loka and the Brahma Jyoti as well to his dear Brajavasis. Secondly, Krishna and Balaram revealed their forms as Vishnu and Anantashesha to Akrura here. And this is where the transition took place between Vrindavan and Mathura, where Avatari Krishna then remained as in aprakat form. And the Avatar Krishna went on to Mathura and Dwarka. And the third important pastime that took place here is that the Yajnapatnis were blessed by Krishna, because they offered their service to him. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.